Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 266 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host as usual. Today, my guest is Steve Fretson. Now, if you're an attorney and you've been on the internet anytime in the last few years, there's a fair chance that you've come across Steve Fretson. He has written several books on issues facing law firms and attorneys who are seeking to grow their practice on sales and networking and things that are changing within the legal space. He also has a couple of different coaching programs. He has a big newsletter. He's got a YouTube channel. So there is an opportunity to completely immerse yourself in all things Steve Fretson. And I'm very happy to have him on the program. He's somebody that I've wanted to have on the program for a long time, but for whatever reason, we haven't got around to making that happen, and we did this this day. So I'm excited to be able to share his knowledge with you, and I encourage you to follow up with him, listen to his podcast, as well as maybe check out the books that he's written and do those kinds of things. But in the meantime, here's a great conversation, in my humble opinion, with my friend Steve Fretson. Steve Fretson, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, thanks, Neil. Appreciate being here.
You know, as I mentioned to you earlier, sometimes after having done this for a little over 5 years, I sometimes wake up and I think, why haven't I had that guy on the show before? And you're a perfect example of this. I've known of Steve Fretson for a while. I've admired the work that you've done and the contribution you make in the legal space. And so I'm going to apologize publicly for not having you on the program before, but maybe it's a question of saving the best for later. So with that, by way of introduction, Steve, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And again, you know, I'm just happy to be here and I'm glad that we were able to get around to it. And you know, I can't wait to have you on my show as well and cross-pollinate. But I always start off by telling people I'm not a lawyer. I never thought I would work with lawyers or work in the legal space at all. My background has been in sales and leading into franchising, where I became more of a business guy, helping small business owners, and eventually hired a coach and worked with a coach to help improve my sales and saw some pretty dramatic growth through coaching and just loved it and felt, and so decided to start my own coaching business, helping entrepreneurs with business development back in 2004. Again, never thinking I would work with an attorney. My father's an attorney. He is a difficult, challenging individual who I love dearly. But, you know, as a teenager, being put on the cross every day wasn't necessarily fun. But, and he never had to really do any business development to grow his law practice back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So I just didn't think it was anything.
Those lucky guys, they didn't have to do that.
Oh, man.
They literally lived by that, hang out my shingle and you build it, they will come.
Yeah. And I mean, he was definitely a great attorney. I don't think anybody would argue that point. But yeah, I mean, he just, you know, built relationships through great work. But 2008 happened, the recession hit, and a number of the entrepreneurs who I had helped dramatically grow their businesses were being asked by their lawyer friends, you know, you're doing great. How did you do that? And they mentioned my name and I started getting some calls from attorneys, and one turned into two and two to three, and then a law firm and then another, and things kind of blew up. And I realized within 2 years that about 80% of my total business was helping attorneys grow their law practices. And I can tell you, Neil, with a lot of certainty that the reason that I work so well with lawyers and why this niche is so perfect for me is because I teach what's called sales-free selling, which I know we're going to get into later, but that's really the key because I really don't teach sales. In fact, I hate sales, I hate selling, and I hate being sold to. So I really have that in common with attorneys who go to law school and never think they'd ever have to sell a client anything or try to get new business. And now it's become, you know, quite critical. So it just all, it all worked together in harmony. And that's what, you know, kind of brought me into here. And it's my passion. It's all I do all day is help attorneys to navigate the bloody waters of competition and apathy and growing their books of business and becoming sustainable. And it's just a blast.
I find it interesting that there is frequent criticism of marketing or business development, for lack of a better word, gurus in the legal space who aren't attorneys themselves. And I never quite understood that. And yours is an example of why that's kind of foolish to entertain that thinking, because as you said, you didn't start out to provide your services to the legal community. The legal community came to you because of a need. And it's only when you organically discovered that 80 or more percent of your business was from the legal community that you thought, well, there's an opportunity. So, you know, the idea that we should have some kind of negative connotation because, oh, he doesn't have a law degree, I think that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really running into that because I think what lawyers care about more than me being a lawyer, or not being a lawyer, is the fact that I specialize in working with lawyers. Yeah. So lawyers at all levels in all practice areas. And the only thing I need to help a lawyer is that they're interested, coachable, and ambitious, that they're interested in that growth and they're not going to just keep making excuses. So that may have been something that I, you know, found, you know, was in existence in my world maybe a number of years ago, but I honestly don't hear about that too often. And the fact that I have worked in over 50 industries and many of them in professional services, financial and accounting, et cetera, I think probably lends additional credibility to the fact that I have all that background and bandwidth and not just having been a lawyer and working with lawyers. So,
well, to the extent that it still exists, I think it speaks to the issue that, you know, attorneys oftentimes think of their business as somehow being different from everybody else's businesses.
Yeah. I mean, I see that. I have had a number of clients explain to me that, you know, going through law school and you know, how, you know, there's definitely a pedestal for doctors and lawyers, you know, being in the spaces that they're in. That it is a higher calling, and there's a level of you know, it's kind of peak of the mountain, if you will. And so, you know, the idea that you know, selling or marketing or all these things are sort of beneath lawyers, and yeah. You know, I get that. That's sort of like what they've been, the spoon they've been fed through, you know, the work they've done. And now they have to get down on the ground with us, you know, humans and get business. And so it can be a little frustrating for them because it's not something they really signed up for. But however, it's become, you know, probably the second most important thing lawyers need to consider is, you know, A, being a great lawyer, and then B, you know, how do I get my own clients?
Yeah. And I would say in some ways it's the other way around. You know, because you need the clients in order to be a great attorney. So, you know, who knows, chicken versus the egg kind of thing.
Well, yeah, there's something to be said about at-bats and improvements based on, you know,
right
experience.
Right. And it's interesting because you hear this all the time, with attorneys saying, well, I didn't go to law school to be a salesman. I don't like sales. And yet, isn't the profession of law something of an endeavor into selling at its heart? Aren't we trying to sell our argument to the court or to opposing counsel or to the other side or to the our opposition in a business deal? We're trying to be persuasive. And I think if you kind of recouch that framework as being improving your ability, your persuasive ability, as opposed to your salesmanship, you might find it a little more palatable and be a little more effective.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely people that argue that, you know, everyone is in sales, you know, whether right. I'm trying to get my 14-year-old to brush his teeth or, you know, trying to get, you know, the dog to listen to me and sit still. You know, we're all in sales in some way.
Both are very challenging.
They are. Probably more so than lawyers, quite frankly. But, you know, in along those lines, you know, maybe the only argument I've ever won with my sister, who's a psychologist, a very well-known and valuable psychologist, was, you know, she goes, I'm not in sales. And I go, Karen, I think you are. And she goes, I'm not. And so we had this discussion about how does she get business, and she's presenting, and she's asking for referrals, and she said, well, okay, what is that? So I finally broke her down and got her to admit it, but it took probably 10 years. So, you know, it is just a perception of, you know, there are some things that are perceived to be, you know, lower forms of engagement or lower, not engagement, but lower forms of activities than other. You know, a brain surgeon could say, hey, I'm saving someone's life with this, with, you know, pulling a tumor out. And that's a higher calling or a higher thing than selling. Well, you know, selling is really not selling. It's really about solving. You know, I'm solving problems for lawyers. Lawyers are solving problems for their clients. And that's really what it's all about. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have any clients to solve problems for, then are you really doing anyone a justice or service?
Right, right. Well, you wrote this book. This book's called Sales Free Selling, The Death of Sales and the Rise of the New Methodology. And I think it's an interesting concept, sales free selling. So tell us a little bit what the basis of that is and what prompted you to write the book and kind of what it's all about.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. My background in sales has always been never give up, never surrender, don't take no for an answer. And I worked for some of the most aggressive sales managers that, you know, could put, you know, anyone to tears. I mean, there are some I had literal nightmares about, you know, going into work. I mean, we're talking hardcore. And I always hated it. And I always felt dirty. And I always, you know, but that was the way things were done, you know, in the 80s and 90s. And I'm aging myself out just saying that. And the reality is that in the last 10 or 15 years, things have changed. You know, buyers have changed. And the idea that we're going to go out and make a pitch, or the idea that we're going to go out and convince someone to hire us, or that we're going to sell legal services, I think is a terrible idea. And the reason I say that is because the methodology that I'm teaching is really more about relationship building. It's about asking questions, about being an active listener, demonstrating empathy, qualifying that there's a good fit. And at the end of the day, walking a buyer through a buying decision to identify if there's a good fit. And isn't that a much better approach? And so the easiest way to explain it is prescription before diagnosis is malpractice. You know, we don't go into a doctor's office and with a hurt arm and he takes one look at it and says, hey, we'll just cut the arm off. And that's how what I feel like lawyers are doing is they're going in with this idea that they have to go in and pitch and sell and convince. And it's absolutely backwards. And so the ones that don't either work with me or don't read about it or don't learn business development, they're still doing it. And it's not that you can't get business that way, but it's just so much less effective and so much less beneficial to the relationship and to how you're perceived as an expert. And so I want to be perceived as an expert based on the approach I have, the questions I ask, how I'm making the prospective client feel about working with me, not about the fanciness of my pitch or the strong words that I'm using or the language. That's just not the way people want to be treated today. And so that's the gist of sales free selling in a nutshell, is teaching lawyers they don't have to sell. They have to go in and do what they do in a deposition or do what they do in the courtroom, which is, you know, identify, you know, evidence that there's an opportunity here to work, you know, together, that this all makes sense.
And in the end, it's a more efficient process, is it not?
It's so much more efficient. I'll give you a quick example. If this happened to me earlier this week already. So I interviewed someone that wanted to work with me. I asked a ton of questions. I have so much clarity about the person's situation, where they are in their looking to grow their practice. And I found this is someone who's absolutely not a fit for me. They're not ready for me yet. Okay. So I'll send them books. I'll send them, you know, podcasts to listen to. I can be a great resource, but they're just too early in their career and they're just not ready to make an investment of time, money, and energy to hire me. So why am I going to try to convince someone to work with me? Or if the person says, I'll think about it, and now I'm chasing after this person for who knows how long, even though they're not really qualified. Yeah. Wouldn't we rather figure it out in 15 minutes or an hour than drag it out over months? which is more time efficient, right? Which is going to benefit both parties.
And have an unsatisfied consumer in the end.
Yeah, and then you end up with someone who's not satisfied because they never should have been your client in the first place, right?
You know, I attribute the success that I have had, whatever that may be, in terms of, quote, closing prospects to the fact that, you know, law is my fourth career and I spent a lot of time in business, but other businesses before that. And that involved oftentimes, you know, hiring people and interviewing people. And I had a mentor back then and took several classes back then that said, when you're hiring somebody, you as the person who's doing the hiring should do the least amount of talking. And I just thought that was a revelation because for most part, an interview meant you telling the candidate all the great things about your company and about the job that you were considering them for. And having heard that, ask them, well, how do you think you can help us? Well, that's just a bass-ackwards way of doing it. And I think, you know, the sales approach, again, if you will, to legal services, you can't be giving the same initial consultation speech to every client, you know, potential client, and just hoping the good ones say yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's the issue is really that lawyers haven't studied business development in any real way. So yeah, they might get some advice from someone at their firm, or they might have a mentor that says, hey, you got to get out there and do stuff. That's not really cutting it. So when I work with a client, for example, I'm giving them specific steps to follow, specific language to use. We talk through questions. And so they have a process that's step by step. And that makes even the most introverted lawyer relieved because they don't have to wing it and feel the pressure to sell or solve or provide free consulting. They can follow steps and get to the result they're looking for. And it's just refreshing to them that they now have a way of doing it where before they didn't.
Well, give me kind of an example of a tactical approach there to, you know, addressing, say, the introverted attorney who's trying to do a consultation, or, you know, some of the, typically, what might you tell a client in terms of addressing that concern?
Well, let me give you one, you know, example of a step that I teach that is so critical, and it changes the game absolutely for the attorneys I work with. So if you think about it, what are buyers looking for? They're looking for information and price. So it's very possible that when a lawyer walks into a meeting with a GC, the GC might go into, you know, here's my problem. How do you solve it? What are your rates? And this is all happening in the first 5 or 10 minutes of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Okay. No real diagnosis has been done. No real questioning has occurred. Okay. So after about 5 or 10 minutes of specifically arranged and researched relationship building, which I'm not going to get into, I would suggest to my clients that they set an agenda for the meeting. And what the agenda does is it sets the ground rules for how the meeting is going to be run so that it doesn't go off the rails, because it will. It will ultimately go off the rails. Okay. So what this agenda, and if you're hearing for this for the first time and it sounds weird or uncomfortable, or I can't see myself saying that, well, then you have everything in common with every lawyer I've ever worked with.
Yeah.
Because this is language that is not known and used before. The pieces within it have been, but not all together. So Neil, I'll go through this with you as a form of a role play. If you would be my helper here and just be, you know, obviously be, cooperative.
Responsive. Yeah.
Sure. Responsive and cooperative. So we've spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about, you know, life and kids or whatever.
Yep.
And I would say, you know, Neil, we could probably talk about this kind of stuff for hours. And I know how valuable your time is and mine as well, quite frankly. And I thought, just to make the best use of our time while we're together, would it be okay just to set a little bit of a game plan for the rest of our meeting today?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. I know we had agreed on about an hour and we've got about, you know, 50 minutes left. And from my perspective, I thought we would just get to know each other better. And at the end of the day, really see if there's a good fit. You know, we may be in a position to work together. One thing that I think would be really helpful is if you allow me to ask you some questions. And I do tend to get into some tougher questions. I just want to make sure that's okay.
Yeah, as long as they're not too personal.
Well, if I step over the line, you'll let me know. But yeah, generally speaking, I want to get into the weeds with you a little bit about your law practice. And just out of curiosity, Neil, anything specific you wanted to make sure you got out of our time together today?
Yeah, I'm hoping to find out whether it'll make a difference to my bottom line if I, you know, delve into some coaching.
Okay, absolutely. And we can cover that, you know, closer to the end of the meeting today. And sort of to that end, if we feel like there's a synergy between us and there might be a good fit, and we want to talk about specific next steps to move this forward in a positive way, we should agree on that at the end of our meeting today. And by the way, if there isn't a fit, you know, you can just be very straightforward with me and tell me no. I would do the same if I didn't feel like I could help you. And I'm certainly happy to provide resources. But is that something that you find acceptable as well?
That's fair.
Okay. Great. So let me ask you some questions. And so then time out, role play and scene or however we want to play it. Yep. That agenda sets up so many positive elements. And the question is can the listener, you know, start to pick out how this would benefit in so many ways, both parties.
Can you deconstruct that a little bit for me?
Absolutely. So number one, it's permission-based. I'm not putting an agenda on you. I asked you if you wanted to make the best use of your time, would it be okay to set a game plan? And you agreed. So now you've agreed to my agenda that I'm about to set up. We agreed on the time. We agreed that this is all about being a fit. We didn't get into any specifics. I left it intentionally vague that this is about, is it a fit? That's it. I don't want to play the improv game and go down a road where I'm talking out my rear for 5 minutes. This is a 90-second cooperative agenda. The second most important thing I asked you was, it okay if I ask you questions and tough questions? And the reason that that's so important is that's really what I want the meeting to be about. That's me as a doctor diagnosing before prescribing. And every lawyer should start thinking about that. It's not about your solutions and it's not about the sale. It's about asking questions and being an active listener to understand, is there a rabbit hole and how deep it goes? Okay. And how much urgency can be driven through those questions for them to change their current situation. That's really what's important, okay? Because if no one's going to change, then where are we going with this?
Yeah.
Okay? And then the most important thing that happened was at the end, because people, buyers in general, their idea of how they want to end things is, I'll think about it, I'll get back to you, I'll let you know. And Neil, what does that really mean?
That means I'm just going to move on and think about it longer and procrastinate and never get back to you.
Yeah, it means no, but they don't want to tell you no because they don't like giving bad news, right? And also, if they've ever, you know, told someone no before and then had someone not take no for an answer, which was my old school sales stuff from the 80s and 90s, right? That never feels good, right? No. That never feels good.
No, but you set it up right away because you said it'd be all right. We'll make a decision at the end whether we're going to go forward or not.
Now,
it's okay, if I say no and you say no, no hard feelings.
Why is that so important? Why is it so important to give you an out?
It takes the pressure off the. It absolutely does.
And it has to be done with heart. It's not a BS line. You have to believe that.
You have to believe it. Yeah.
You have to say it and believe it and get buy-in on that point. And it's so helpful because at the end of the meeting, if things are a little wishy-washy, I can go to the person and say, look, you know, earlier in the meeting, we had kind of said, we were going to either move this forward or call it a day. And I just wanted to get your take, you know, which direction you wanted to go. And they're going to tell me one of the two. And now we're not in the think about it, maybe I'll get back to you world where I have to sit and chase somebody for the next couple months with them just blowing me off because they don't want to tell me no. We're getting to what's real. And that's what this is all about. It's about having an honest, real conversation with a buyer who generally has been not being real with people in the past because they feel like they're going to get sold something. And they've got their wall up.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works. And we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. And so often as attorneys, you know, our first question to the potential client is, how can I help you?
And, I think that's a good question. I probably have some others that are also good, but
that's the first question. I don't think it doesn't move the ball forward, as you suggest, and doesn't set the expectation that at the end of this consultation, we want to make a decision whether you're going to hire me or not.
Yeah. And I can, you know, if you want me to continue to add some value for your listener, I'll give you a question that I teach all my clients to use. And it's absolutely killer, because what are we really trying to get at in this meeting? We're trying to get at what are the pains, the fears, the angst, the problems that this particular client, potential client, is facing. And the more we can get to the root of that, it's like there's more meat on the bone than you thought. You know, you might just be going in because they said they need an estate plan, or because they need a real estate closing, or because they've got an employee that's giving them a hard time. But when you start asking more questions and getting to the root of those problems, it might end up becoming a much more emotional situation than it started. But that doesn't happen without questioning. So I'll give you the starter question that I teach my clients. I'll put it in my world, and then I'll put it in a lawyer's world. So my world is, with regards to business development and growing your law practice, Neil, what are your primary challenges, frustrations, and concerns that you're having?
Okay.
And then I zip my lip and I wait for you to respond with whatever you're going to respond. I don't have a good plan. My networking activities are all over the place. I'm not really getting any results. I'm spinning my wheels with X, Y, and Z, not getting in front of enough decision makers. I'm getting, you know, told no too often. Whatever the case might be, that's what I want to hear, because that gives me some initial information that this is someone real. This is someone that has actual problems I might be able to solve, okay? From a lawyer's perspective, it could be something like with regards to employee issues that are coming up on a daily basis, what are some of the main challenges, frustrations, and concerns you're having that you wanted to address today? And then the GC would say, well, I've got this sexual harassment issue. I've got this employee who's going nuts. I've got, you know, whatever they're going to share. And we want to get that all on the table, because that's going to be the start of where we're going to take this meeting and how deep we can go down that rabbit hole I mentioned earlier.
Well, I think it makes 100% sense in my view. And I think that if our listeners are interested, they ought to take advantage of picking up that book at the very least, Sales Free Selling. But you did mention another area, a topic that I want to touch upon, and that was networking. Because when we talk about business development and client acquisition, I would say 80% or more of the attorneys that I speak to say that networking is their number one marketing approach, their number one method for getting new clients, so that they can have the sales conversation with them. And then when you ask, well, what does that include? They went, well, you know, I go to a lot of bar association events, and I'm a member of the PTA, and they don't really have a good sense of what networking is all about and how it relates to their law practice. Now, again, not to keep plugging everything, all things Fretzen, but you did write a book about networking called The Networking Handbook. So why don't we kind of delve into that a little bit? What are the key factors that an attorney needs to be focused on when it comes to networking and promoting their law practice?
Well, I'll start off by giving sort of an analogy. So, Neil, you and I are going to take a trip through Africa. Okay. We're going to get a group of 10 people. You and I are going to lead a group through Africa. We're going to start on the southern tip of the continent. We're going to work our way up. We don't have any money. We don't have a compass. We don't have a guide. We don't have weapons. We don't have food, provisions, anything, but we're going to take this trip together. And how far realistically will this band of folks get before problems start to arise and we either eat each other or get eaten ourselves, right?
Yeah, just destroyed by bugs.
Yeah. Anyone that's watched any of those Naked and Afraid shows or anything
it's
like
that. It's always the ants.
It's always the bugs, right?
It's never they were chased down by a cheetah. It was the ants that got them.
No, but we didn't even bring bug spray. We weren't prepared for this trip at all, okay? And I feel like that's how lawyers are going into networking. They're finding things to keep themselves busy. It's not targeted. It's not focused. It's just grinding away at their time that's billable because they don't have a plan or they don't have an approach that's going to get them results. And there's some simple things that can be done to, you know, identify whether or not something is a good fit. I mean, if you've been in a networking group for many years and you're not getting any real results out of it, either you need to dramatically change the way that you're managing that event or that group of people, or you need to get out. Like, you know, there's a guy I talked to the other day. He manages a law firm. He's at multiple chambers of commerce and a BNI. And I'm not saying that's a bad place to be, but for the targets that he's going after that are bigger businesses, they're absolutely not there. No. And they already know him. He doesn't have to stay there for this small return on investment he's getting. Because it's just not the right place for him. So we want to look at how we're investing our time and we want to start making better decisions. And I would start off by figuring out who your targets are. If you can just figure out who your targets are, and I'll give you two different categories, that could change how you're getting business completely. So number one is, who are the targets you're going after as it relates to end users? So if you're, for example, a real estate attorney, and your targets are realtors, well, where are the realtors? Are you going where the realtors are? That's your bread and butter. Sure. Are you going where the mortgage people are? It seems simple, but you know, lawyer referrals probably aren't going to do it for you going to the bar associations. The same way finding a way into a group of realtors would be, okay? Right. We could play this game, you know, but again, if you're going after big, you know, $1 million litigation with major corporations, you've got to really consider, you know, where those networking opportunities might be. It might be on a board. It might be a charity. It might be being a member of a private golf club. Where are the CEOs? Where are the CFOs, the general counsels hanging out? If that's your end user, you want to try to figure out and go there. The second group that I would mention are strategic partners. And I define strategic partners as the individuals who can regularly and routinely refer you business. And there are definitely synergies. For me, for example, a title company, an e-discovery company, a marketing group that does search engine optimization, pay-per-click, but they don't do business development. We have the same clients, but we do different things. And so can I go where they are? All right. And can I cooperate and collaborate with them? And I do that all the time. All right. And if you're a lawyer going after big corporate deals, and you know that the strategic partners for you are going to be other high-level attorneys or big consulting, you know, groups, then that's where you need to go. And if those places don't exist in the normal world, then you've got to either create your own or you've got to go, again, you know, look at those high-level, high-profile groups. And then, of course, it's what you do when you're there. You can't just, you know, show up and hope that you're going to get that business.
How does that change during the pandemic and going forward? How do you see that changing? Do you see the networking process getting back to the way it used to be, or is it going to be fundamentally different?
I think it's going to be a mix. I've already started scheduling in-person networking meetings and lunches and coffees with other people that have been vaccinated. So I definitely think that's happening. The conferences where people were doing all their networking, that might take a little while longer. So I think that it's going to continue to be a mix. I mean, the beauty of what's going on right now, and I hate to say there's you know, positives in something as tragic and horrible as a pandemic, but I think a lot of lawyers have seen this. Efficiency is way up. I mean, I can be networking in London this morning and then in California this afternoon and then back in Chicago later in the day in the same day. And I haven't, you know, got off my rump.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is unprecedented that we're able to get away with that and do all that amazing networking and make all these great connections. But you have to do that. You have to be active. If you're just sitting, you know, saying networking doesn't happen because the pandemic is going on, well, then I think you've totally missed the boat.
Yeah. And I will say that, you know, when the first part of the pandemic, when some of the in-person events transitioned to virtual events, it was a little stale in the sense that it was just, you watched a screen all day long and there was no interaction. And that was challenging, to say the least. The way these events are being run now, with breakout rooms and VIP meetups and small group interaction, and specifically addressing the networking component of what those types of conferences used to provide, is just exploded in terms of capability and complexity. And so you can get an awful lot out of a virtual conference now where you couldn't in the beginning of the pandemic.
Well, and then add on to that, that someone that goes to a conference and is out of the office for 3 days, you know, listening to speakers speak and doing ineffective networking, you know, that's a tremendous amount of time.
That's time lost.
Yeah.
And money spent.
Yep. So there's a lot of positives. We just have to dig in. You know, another one just to throw into the mix, this is networking in a different way, but you know, all the networking that's going on in LinkedIn. People getting connected, people, you know, posting and then commenting on posts and sharing posts. And that is a form of relationship building. It is a form of networking because you're meeting, I've met so many new people from all over the world, from London and Nigeria and South Africa that I never would have met before because that social media is bringing us all together. And then I don't have to travel to South Africa. Not that I wouldn't mind doing that and going on that safari that you and I were just talking about, but I would, you know, hire a guide.
All right, so you've opened up this portal for me here, this dimension shifting black hole that to me is LinkedIn. I'm pretty active in social media, Twitter, Facebook business page, groups, all of that. LinkedIn's, I've just never got the traction with it that I would like to have. And I know I'm not alone amongst attorneys. So what am I missing? What's the key there to making LinkedIn a viable platform for attorneys?
Yeah, I mean, I love to give analogies that are
because I know you're very active on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You've got a number of your podcasts have been devoted to. I just answered my own question. I probably should spend more time listening to your podcast about how to use LinkedIn.
Well. On my YouTube channel, I did a great, and shout out to Frank Ramos, but Frank and I did a great hour long presentation on LinkedIn, and I've gotten such amazing feedback from that. But the cute answer is, you know, let's take our smartphones and dump them in a toilet, and let's go back to using a corded phone with a rotary dial. And the reason that's so silly is because it's memorable, because people would never do that. But that's how powerful I find LinkedIn to be. Not only for myself, but for my clients, because I teach them how to use it in a way where they're not just, you know, in the background. They're proactively using it on so many levels, for marketing, for branding, and most importantly, for business development. There's never been a tool in the business world better than LinkedIn. And we're going back, you know, when I sold shoes at Kinney Shoes. Shout out to anyone over 40.
Oh, Kinney Shoes. Remember them well.
Oh, man.
Got my school shoes every September from Kinney Shoes.
That's it. The Great American Shoe Store.
There you go.
You know, the way that we had to develop business all those years, and it was tough. And now we have this amazing tool that actually acts as our secondary website where we can load up. And just, in fact, this morning I had a few minutes and I loaded in all the podcasts that I've been a guest on. Okay. And I'm not going to start listing them out, but that's, you know, that's a platform where I can load up video. I can load up podcasts. I can load up articles. I can, you know, draw people into reading, you know, LinkedIn recommendations about what my, you know, performance has been with attorneys. And they go, oh my God, I actually know this attorney. Didn't know he worked with Steve and he tripled his book or he did this or he did that. Well, that's all great branding for me. Okay. And branding for my business. So there's the branding element. There's the marketing element, which is what do you do with all your stuff? What are you doing with all of your podcasts, all of your articles, all of this content that you're creating? How are you getting that out so people can see it and hear it and watch it?
Blog posts.
Well, blog posts, but yeah. Who's going to your blog? You know, I have that too, but I also want to put it up on social media. Sure. And think about the interaction. So Neil, when I post this podcast on social media and I tag you and you tag me, it goes out to my 10,000, it goes out to your 10,000 or however many. And we're just exponentially sharing content that's going to be listened to by a lot more people. Okay. So we're talking about content creation and then how do we get it out there? But if I had to give one thing to the audience that I think is really critical, it's the ability to find inside connections. LinkedIn does this better than any other tool ever created. So there's a lawyer out there that says, geez, I would really love to get into Walgreens. I could help them with their real estate. I've been doing commercial real estate for 20 years and God, that would be a great institutional client for me. Well, what if you went into LinkedIn, you typed in Walgreens and you were able to see a list of the general counsels that work in the real estate department. And by the way, who you know that knows them. And you could get that person to make a quality introduction to the GC over at Walgreens. And you actually get in the door there because of it. That happens. It happens for me. Yeah. It happens for my clients.
I asked the same question of somebody recently who is also an estate planner in another jurisdiction. And they told me that this kind of addresses the last two points we made about networking and LinkedIn. Instead of going to conferences for estate planning attorneys, which have their value, you increase your knowledge about estate planning itself. They wanted to find what are the conferences that financial planners are going to. And they wanted to find out how they can get invited or how they can, you know, pay for a ticket to go. And they did so through LinkedIn. They looked up the financial planners and found out what conferences they were going to and looked into the conference and booked a ticket and attended a virtual conference for financial planners and developed a whole set of centers of influence from just that one action alone.
Yeah. So right. It goes exactly back to what I mentioned about finding your targets. And for estate planners, you know, high level wealth managers and financial planners are the targets that they're the ones who are going to say, you need to get your money in an estate plan, your home in an estate plan. And here's the guy that you should use. So, but if you don't know those wealth advisors or the right wealth advisors, the ones that focus on maybe the high net worth people or that are just excellent networkers, LinkedIn is, you know, it's direct. And so you can either follow those people and as they're posting things, comment on their posts and give them props and build a relationship directly through LinkedIn, or you could find who you have in common and reach out to those people proactively and say, hey, I see, you know, Fred Smith, who's a financial planner, and this is someone I'd like to meet. And, you know, how well do you know him? And by the way, do you think he'd be open to meeting me? And would you qualify that for me? So you're asking a favor of somebody, but they're generally more than happy to do it. It's an email they can send out. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But the next thing you know, you're in front of this financial planner that you never would have met at a networking event, because maybe that person doesn't network, but you met them through LinkedIn, through that research being done on LinkedIn. You know, and this is why recruiters pay, you know, I don't know if it's $6,000 to $10,000, you know, a year per recruiter for, you know, LinkedIn, whatever the name of the highest level of LinkedIn is, because that's how they're doing their job today. It's just not done by making phone calls. It's done through the research.
For sure. Well, listen, Steve, I said in the beginning here that I like to treat this as two guys getting around together over a cup of coffee or an adult beverage talking about business. At this point, I'm either wired up on caffeine or it's last call at the bar here. Both of which have been known to happen with me. Before I let you go, tell our audience a little bit. You have a couple of different programs and how people can work with you if they're so inclined. Tell us a little bit about how that works and where they may go to reach out to you if they want to do so.
Sure. Thanks, Neil. So I would say, first of all, that I'm really only interested in working with attorneys that are highly motivated to grow, not 10%, but double, triple their book. And so what I put them through is a pretty rigorous 7-8 month program, which combines training in a, I hate to say classroom, but you're in a room with other lawyers who are learning the same things. And a combination of that and one-on-ones with me over a period of time, teaching you all the skills and working with you so that you can internalize how to do business development for the rest of your career. So very different than other coaches in that I offer that training component and I'm also on full retainer. So it's like a package where everything is included and we partner for 8 months to make sure that you're coming out and the other side, an assassin, okay? It can grow your book of business, rest of your career. The other thing that I offer is for people that are already successful business developers, and I offer peer advisory, lawyer peer advisory groups where I would put people in groups that are, if you're under $1 million in origination, I've got groups for you with other highly motivated attorneys. If you're a managing partner or someone that's killing it and 2, 3, 4 million, and you want to network and be in a group with other high performing attorneys, I have a number of groups around that as well. And that's really what I do. It's those two kinds of programs, coaching and training, and then, you know, mastermind style peer advisory. And that's where I spend my time. And I just have a blast doing it.
Can I point out how refreshing that is to understand the differentiation between the programs? Because a lot of times when you work with, you know, some of the coaches out there in the legal space, it's you sign on with me and we just keep going month after month after month. And I hope you kind of pick up on some of the stuff that I'm teaching and we'll hold you, have some accountability, but you know, really it's up to you. And it's an ongoing process. I mean, I like that you kind of focus this and target it at a 7 to 8 month period of time. And there's going to be follow-up after that, I'm sure, but that's where our focus is. Or if you just want to get into a mastermind type of group, a peer group, and reap all the benefits with people who are in the same boat as you, it's not one mastermind, not one peer group. You got several. And they're regionally based too, are they not?
So everything is done by Zoom now, which, you know, we talked about the benefits of it. And so I've got clients from all over the country, you know, getting together and it's been phenomenal.
So, I mean, I think both of those models work, you know, for different segments of the legal community. I'm really happy to share that with our audience. So we will have all of that in our show notes, Steve, along with your contact information. So if people want to reach out to you, I hope they will. And to say that I enjoyed spending time with you today is really an understatement. I'm glad to have you on. I'm sorry it took so long. And let's not wait another 5 years before we do this again.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you having me. And again, I hope this was valuable to your audience. And I appreciate what you do and how you're helping the legal, you know, community.
Absolutely. Thanks again so much for being on The Law Entrepreneur. Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.